Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, the talented comedian Felicia Michaels talks about Mitzi Shore and the Famous Comedy Store.
I've had two experiences with weird things that have happened to me at the Comedy Store. It's kind of creepy at night in the Comedy Store if no one's around. Like if in the podcast studio, if I have to go in there at midnight to grab my bag or something, I fucking run down there and I fucking grab that bag and I run up, right?
Today on the show, comedian Felicia Michaels talks about the Comedy Store and its legendary owner, Mitzi Shore. Stay close.
Hey, this is Felicia Michaels, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian and author Amber Tozer. Do you know Amber Tozer?
I certainly do. Is she still in England?
I love her so much. Yeah, she's in England.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks ago at Story Smash, which you're going to be judging next week. I'm
right.
So excited.
I'm stoked.
So last month, Story Smash is happening. I'm on stage, and all of a sudden, like, the show's going on. I'm talking, and I'm looking out in the audience, and it's like an aberration. I see Amber Tozer. But see, she lives in England, so how is she at my game show?
Right, right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I think Amber Tozer's here. And she's over visiting.
Uh-huh.
And so it was super fun. I had her on the show. And she talks about volunteering. She's been on Storyworthy three times. She always has a good story. And last week was no exception. So you guys go back, listen to Amber. But not today. Not today. Because today you're here with comedian Felicia Michaels. And you are so accomplished. And you are
Jesus.
So, you've done so much. No, you
I feel
have.
Like such a loser, though. I feel listen, like I'm not, I haven't hit the big time ever.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. In the female comedian world, you're like people we aspire to. Your career.
Well, you're the only one that thinks that, though.
That's not true.
I think you might be the only one.
That's not true. You're headlining. You're performing all the time.
I'm very lucky that I still get to work at this point. I'm awkwardly aged, so I'm very fortunate to get any kind of stage time.
What does
Absolutely.
It mean? What does it mean awkwardly aged?
Well, you know, I'm not fresh meat anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but as a comedian, it's not like we're asking you to. Like run the mile.
Yeah, but it is, you know, it's a young person's game. It is a young person's game. If you're at the Comedy Store at 1:30 in the morning, you know, and you know, you're in your, you know, 50s.
Yeah.
It's rare.
Well, you mean in terms of who's in the audience?
Well, just in terms of, this comedy is a young person's game if you haven't hit certain milestones. Mm-hmm. I've had a very lovely career. In the 90s, I was on television a lot with my stand-up. I've had many comedy albums. You know, I've done the whole gamut to a certain point. I had holding deals. I did my own sitcom that never got picked up. But, I've done a lot of different... wildly different things. You know, I have a special now on Amazon Prime, but I also do a lot of photography, comedy related, and I do short films, and I made a feature documentary last year.
You really are so, just oozing creativity. So you do it all.
I do, in certain sense, I do it all, but I'm very lucky that that to be in this day and age, like back in the day when you did comedy and you were like, yeah, I'm making this little short film, people would be like, get out of our face. Like it was very segregated. Like you did one thing, focus on the one thing. If you're doing other stuff, that means you're not focused on your one thing. But now it's topsy-turvy where it's like, okay, you do stand up. What else do you do? It's completely shifted on its axis, which I think has been a better thing. I mean, back then there were three gatekeepers. And if you, you know, weren't liked by three people in the business that, you know, were the gatekeepers, you were destined to go on the road or eventually quit comedy or, you know, pursue something else. But nowadays it's different. It's the complete opposite, you know, which is, I think is better because there's so many comedians now that have very successful careers through podcasting, through other things that they're able to surpass the gatekeepers.
Yeah, I really feel lucky to be in an age where it can be very much your motivation, your own self who makes it happen. In other words, you right. can't tell me not to have my RSS feed. I mean, that's mine forever right. and ever.
Right, exactly.
And so exactly. you can't tell me I'm fired. Yes, it's yes. beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it is sort of like the sum of the whole, you know? So it's not just your, as it were, your Instagram feed or your Twitter feed or your website, but it's also, you know, do you have a book? And did you do a short film? And can you direct? And can you do storytelling versus comedy versus mm-hmm. all different sorts of mediums? I like
right.
it.
Right, yeah. No, it's great. I'm very lucky that I've experienced all of the above. And I'm very lucky that I'm still playing at it. You yeah. know, I'm very lucky.
Well, I guess, I mean, you are lucky, but I also think like, but if you're funny, you're funny. I mean, I don't care how old you yeah. are if you make me yeah. laugh.
Right. No, you're, two things can be true at the same time. Mm. You know, like I think a lot of people say, you know, bring up Barry Katz. If, you know, he likes to use the term, Barry Katz is a big comedy manager. And he, for a long time, used the term, if you're undeniable.
Right.
100%. That can be absolutely true.
You won't be denied. Yeah,
but not everyone's a door pounder. You know, some people knock politely and are the best guest at the party, but you might not hear their knock. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, I think two things can be true at the same time.
I hope yeah. that made sense.
I know it does make sense because it's the same with any creative endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not that the best songs are on the radio. It's the people who had the best record deals or the best managers that pushed
right,
or
right.
whatever. I mean, there are gatekeepers in music as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I do think if you are working for a long time at comedy and you are actively getting gigs and you are actively writing and you're actively making your project, everybody has, you know, everybody has at least a certain amount of talent. Like no yeah. one, like when people start talking shit, I hope I can cuss. When people, is
yeah.
that okay?
Yeah.
When people start talking shit about other comedians, it's like, you're not doing yourself a service. You're doing yourself a disservice because the reality is, if we're working, especially in LA at these showcase clubs or New York at showcase clubs, if you're working, actively working in those big 10 clubs, mm-hmm. the big 10 clubs across right. the country, you have enough talent. Mm-hmm. Some people have way more talent. Some people barely make the cutoff. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's doesn't help you to talk shit about people. It doesn't help you to do that because the reality is everybody does have above a certain board of talent.
Sure, sure, yeah, sure. And also, you know, it's like everybody has a unique voice. Like in comedy, yeah, you're going to talk about your relationship or your family or your kids because it's unique to you. You can be original just in your own voice. And so uh-huh. if you are using your own voice, you should have something to say.
Right.
If you're being authentic.
Yes, 100%. But it is interesting growing up in comedy because I got very lucky as a young woman, like at the age of 21, was made a regular at the Comedy Store. I was wow. very lucky in that sense back in the day. Wow. But it's interesting because there's this woman comic, you should have her on your show, named Tiff Stevenson. She's from England. She's very popular/famous in England, but she's come over to the United States to make a go of it. She's been on tons of TV.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, and she's a very talented lady. And we went to go see some comedy, and there was a young woman on stage, and I was brought up in comedy. Like, my thing was I was always dirty, but mm-hmm. it wasn't in a time when a lot of women weren't dirty, that mm-hmm. it wasn't acceptable. And so in my way, I feel comfortable in saying, yeah, I was a stepping stone in comedy to a certain extent. But it is interesting and humbling to watch younger women, specifically this younger woman, do comedy. And the joy she had of just, it was like 1:30 in the morning, just being completely filthy. But it's humbling in a sense of, God, I remember being 21, 22 and just enjoying being able to talk and be as disgusting as possible and having the attention for it and thinking, oh, I'm the first one to do that. But it's humbling to watch a young woman feel her oats in that same sense, knowing now that I've been in comedy for a while, like, yeah, maybe in that era there weren't a lot of white women talking about comedy, but, you know, there was Moms Mabley in the 40s and 50s and 60s who was pretty dirty. And I don't know if you know who Moms Mabley was. Yeah, she was an African-American comedian, and she really paved the way for a lot of people. And she was actually mentioned in Barack Obama's inauguration address as some one of the women, or one of the African Americans, that brought a tremendous strength and a different variety. I can't say exactly what he would say, obviously, about her, but it's humbling to be around in the same business for a long time and to understand your place in it and to be excited for people who really aren't treading on new ground, but who deserve to have a voice to roll around in that and to figure out what they really want to talk about. You know, so it's really a cool place to be, because as a young comedian, you look at the older comedians, and I know because I was there, because I was one of the youngest ones,
right,
and one of the few women at the time, to look at the other older comics and to think, oh, those poor guys. And then to realize, no, I'm so lucky. Like yesterday I went with one of my oldest comedy pals, a gentleman named Alan Stevens, who was a producer on Roseanne and worked with Robert Wall. And he was one of the guys who hung around Kinison and one of the original outlines of comedy. And we went to go see Mitzi's Grave up at Mount Sinai near Forest Lawn in Glendale or Burbank area. And it was just really pleasing and humbling to be a part of our industry's history and to look with love upon my fellow comedians who have lived the crazy lifestyle, him amongst many, the craziest.
Alan, your friend.
And my friend Alan, and to just be so self-aware and appreciative of the journey.
It's the wisdom that comes with age.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
And seeing where you are. And it's true. You've accomplished so much and you've been around so long.
Fuck you, man. No,
like,
I'm kidding.
But here's the thing. I'm older than you. Don't have that background. I didn't even get out to LA till I was 31. Yeah. I didn't even allow myself to have a creative life until I was 31, 32. I had a real job, as it were. And so it's just interesting that you were able to start so young.
I was very lucky, that I stumbled into it.
You kind of like stayed with it. That's just so beautiful.
But I did stop for like 9 years, 10 years when I had my kids.
Interesting.
And when they started junior high, I kind of got right back into it.
I know exactly what you mean, because I just got back into comedy doing stand-up a year ago because I just couldn't justify going to the open mics and getting a babysitter. Yeah. Couldn't. But now, you know, she's older. And anyway, so today you bring forth the topic, Mitzi Shore.
Okay.
And I love this topic because I've met Mitzi several times.
You did?
Well, she, first of all, she passed on me at the Comedy Store like back in 2000. I mean, you know, 20 years ago.
Right.
She passed on me. But then later in my life, I dated Yakov Smirnoff.
You did?
Comedian.
And you shouldn't say that out loud to the wild.
Friends with her.
Yeah.
And so we would go over and visit her.
He's a great guy, by the way.
Yeah, of course. And very generous. And anyway, we would go visit Mitzi, and she, at this point, you know, was really very ill and in the wheelchair and not speaking at all.
Right.
But what was interesting is we would sit and sometimes take her around the neighborhood in the wheelchair. She wouldn't say anything, but Yakov would talk and I would talk. And I would say, you know, you passed on me 20 years ago. No, I didn't. I would.
Oh God, that would be so fun. That would be her worst nightmare.
Mitzi, why'd you pass on me? No, but I. We would talk, but she wouldn't speak at all. But then her helper would say to us that Mitzi wouldn't speak at all while we were there. But then we would leave, and she would take a nap. And when she woke up, she would talk about us being there.
Oh, nice!
And how she heard everything we said. So it was really her disease kind of like, you know, really was difficult. She couldn't communicate when she wanted to, it seemed.
You know, I am going to say that I would love to talk not about the disease.
Yeah.
And I would like to talk about her legacy and what it meant to a lot of people, yeah, using my story as an example, because I know she wouldn't want that to be her legacy of being illness, because yeah, she's a very strong woman.
Of course. I mean, Yakov says that she was like his mother.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
yeah, and Yakov and oh, yeah, his father built the belly room.
Yeah, yeah. She was the mother of dragons.
Exactly. So I can't wait to hear your story. But before we get to Felicia's story, you guys, I wanted to remind you, you know this. Follow me on the social medias. At Storyworthy, you know this. But what I really want you to do is follow the Story Smash Instagram feed, because that's where I put all the show action and all the hilarious pictures of the game show. Felicia, you're going to be so great next week.
Oh, I'm excited.
February 29th at the Improv. It's our 33rd or 34th show in a row.
Oh, wow. Wow.
We sell out every show, and it is too funny. Also, the shows are, of course, podcast here on Storyworthy, so you can always go back and listen to the last 33 live shows.
You get good guests on that show. Big-time writers and producers and comedians. Here's what's happening.
Because for the judges, uh-huh, I'm giving people an hour of time on the stage at the Improv, mm-hmm, and you don't have to prepare. You just need to crack wise.
Right.
And you get to be with Danny Zucker, who's like, yeah, one of the funniest people in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we laugh so hard sometimes between you and I, Felicia. Sometimes I pee my pants just a little bit.
Okay, well. Okay, there
it's
you go.
It's information.
Okay, there you go.
All right, you guys, Felicia Michaels, she's here right now. Okay. As we talked about, you are an award-winning filmmaker. You're a professional freelance photographer, a comedian, obviously, and a podcaster. And your comedy has appeared on, you know, really everywhere. NBC, ABC, Showtime, Comedy Central, A&E. And you were the comedy grand champion on Star Search.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
But it's still so interesting.
It was a fantastic experience.
I bet it was.
It was like a dream.
Was Ed McMahon the guy?
Yeah, Ed McMahon was the host. And God, people are like, what? Star Search? What the hell is that? But it was like the American Idol of its day. The year that I did it, Britney Spears was on there as a little dancer. Like, that's how fucking long ago it was.
What was the prize?
You got $100,000.
Did you get $100,000?
Yeah, I got $100,000. And $100,000, like, I know it's a lot of money, but back then, that was like when you're in your, I think I was in my late 20s, at the 28 at the time, and that was like, God. You know, I grew up on welfare, so I was like, what the
what
F?
What did you do with that money?
Right when I won Star Search, my brother had passed away, and he had a little girl, so I put some money away for her. And the great thing about that is after my brother passed away, she had a rough upbringing. And then she came and stayed with me because she was like living on some weed dealer's couch or whatever. And up in San Francisco. And I was like, you got to come down and go to school. And so she went to community college.
Wow.
And I paid for the classes. And then.
Did she live with you?
She lived with me. I had a guest house. No, she was already like, I think she came to me when she was 19 or 20.
Wow.
And she did so good at community college. She got a full ride to Berkeley. So the money that I had set aside, it wasn't a lot of money, but it was my Star Search money. I had set aside, financed her being able to move up to Berkeley and to buy books and a bunch of, you know, she did
Felicia,
get a,
that is
yeah,
so
it's a really
beautiful.
Great, and it was a gift because I have two boys, and at the time they were younger teenagers, and you know, when you,
so it was now, their cousin.
Their cousin, but nowadays when people, when you have kids, people put so much pressure on, if your kid doesn't get into a college like this, your kid's life is going to be ruined. And it's not true. It's all a lie. It's all a lie. Yeah, some kids should get into great colleges, but some kids aren't ready and should do a community college, and it should be free.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily believe we should, this is my whole weirdness, but I don't think we should pay for everybody's college loans, but I do think the first 2 years should be free.
Yeah, because they're 18.
Yeah.
They're 18. Yeah. They can't even drink alcohol.
Yeah.
And supposedly.
And some kids aren't ready. My niece is a secret genius. She got graduated this year from Berkeley with honors, and now is making applications to go to Princeton and Harvard. And,
wow.
Yeah, like, but she wasn't ready till she was 20. And this whole facade, this whole bag of lies that they tell parents about, you and your whole family and your kids should go into debt for a college education, is angry making. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I agree.
It's not true.
And it's not just college.
Everyone has
it's
a different path.
And it starts at preschool. I mean, they
get on you at preschool.
They get
about
on
it.
You when you're pregnant.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
It's like, why would you think somebody else could raise your child better than you?
Yeah.
Like, what
yeah.
are you talking about?
Yeah.
Why would I give them the money to have the pleasure of being with my baby? It's so bizarre. Anyway, listen, I am so excited that you're here. We can find, you guys can find Felicia over at our website, FeliciaMichaels.net, right?
Yes.
And then on Twitter and Instagram at Felicia Michaels.
Yes. And also my podcast at Liars Club.
Yes, yeah. At Liars Club, which is a great show.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, it's so great. And it's, and where are you guys at? Are you up in the belly room, or where are you guys at?
We
in the comedy
do,
store?
We stream our podcast live from the comedy store. Studios, which is, it's called Comedy Channel, downstairs in the basement, and we do shows there once a month, but because we stream live, people play along. We stream Mondays at 4:30 and Fridays at 8:30, most Fridays at 8:30 unless we have shows, and people play along.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah.
such a fun concept.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's so somebody's a liar. Somebody's
yeah, yeah.
a liar.
Well, we ask
people
to come on and tell two stories. Yeah. One is the truth, one is a lie. And then we, along with people that are playing along live, we try to figure out who's lying. And
I love
The lies people tell are the truths people tell, where you're just like,
that's the thing.
I
that's
don't
how
think
they
you
get
really
you,
want
right?
to tell this live.
You think, like, you could not have made that up.
Right.
So you think it's the
right.
lie.
Right.
And you're dealing with comedians.
Yeah,
so it's so
exactly.
funny. By the way, you had that podcast. I mean, you've been podcasting a long time.
Off and on a long time.
Because
yeah.
you started with Joey Diaz in 2010, which is when I started Storyworthy.
I think it was even, was it 2010?
Or maybe 2009.
No.
I mean, it was.
Yeah, it was pretty early. Yeah, maybe
you're one of the
2010.
Earliest, you're one
yeah.
of the earliest podcasters, really.
Yeah, I did it with Joey, and then Joey Diaz is has the Church of What's Happening Now, and it's a tremendous podcast.
Yeah, it's just way over.
So excited for yeah. him to do that, but
it's huge
at the time, and it's very edgy. And he was smoking a lot of weed on it. He still does off and on, and it and I we did about. I can't remember how many episodes. We did a good run on it.
Oh, at least 100. At least 100.
No, I think it was less than that. But we had a tremendous success with it right out of the gate, totally because of Joey. Joey
yeah.
is, you know, he was one of Rogan's crew and all those people that yeah. started with Rogan and through the grace of Rogan, who's an, I think, an amazing guy. Like, mm-hmm. I hate when people come up and they're like, Joe Rogan, like women especially, Joe Rogan, me. It's like, no. Joe Rogan's a cool guy. Joe
Good,
Rogan
yeah.
will come over to the ladies, shake their hands, talk to them. Joe Rogan is an excellent person, honestly.
Yeah. Good.
Like, you know, we all have our shit, but so
his success is just through
yeah,
the roof.
It's yeah.
It's
he's
wild.
A great guy, yeah.
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 All right, you guys, listen, let's get right to it.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you are, you guys, put your hands together for Felicia Michaels.
Oh, I'll tell you something that just happened to me. The Comedy Store was, for the people that don't know, was a gangster nightclub back in the day, like Sinatra would hang. All the stars.
In the 40s and
50s. Ciro's. It was called Ciro,
yeah.
C-I-R-O. And it was a gangster's nightclub. So there was always, like, everyone always saying, there was this comic named Blake Clark. He, if you saw Blake Clark, you would notice him, like, he always plays like a dad in the Adam Sandler movie. He's a great guy. And one time, Blake Clark told me a story. Now, here's the thing about the Comedy Store for the people that don't know. There are three rooms in the Comedy Store. There's the original room, which is the room that Mitzi rented, hence the original room, and then she slowly started buying the rest of the club. And then there's the main room, which was a big Vegas-style showroom. And you know what? My friend Alan, who I just went to go see Mitzi's grave and lay flowers at it, he was telling me, and I didn't realize, that same stage in the main room is the stage where all the greats sang and tap dance on. It's the same exact stage.
Amazing.
You're doing comedy on a stage that Sinatra was on. I mean,
yeah.
it's if you're like a show business geek,
yeah.
like you geek out like that. So Blake Clark told me this story about how this is in the time of Kinison. about he was working when him, you know, because the hierarchy at the Comedy Store is usually, unless you're a name and you've already established yourself, you come in. She had a system because she wanted the Comedy Store to be like a college, like where people learned from the best. So what she would do, if back then it was guys, if you were a guy and you're trying to break in the comedy, she would give you a job like as the door guy. Right. And so this way you were forced to sit there and watch comedy as you sat people. You could make a little money on the side, or you'd park the cars. A lot of times they rotated it around. They have since, like, my podcast partner was officially the first girl door guy ever at the Comedy Store. And now they let girls, not just girls, but everybody, like, work the booth. Some of them bartend. Some of them are, like, I was just with Punky Johnson, where she bartends still, and she was just on Bill Burr's The Ringers on Comedy Central, and we were in the back bar. There's a back bar now, you know, that's all, it's a whole thing. But Blake Clark told me that once in the main room, as he was closing up the main room, it's kind of creepy at night in the Comedy Store if no one's around. Like, if in the podcast studio, if I have to go in there at midnight to grab my bag or something, I fucking run down there and I fucking grab that bag and I run up, right? So Blake Clark told me that in the time of Kinison, before Kinison was a big star, Kinison always had this crazy energy that was like, I remember watching Kinison when I was like 21 years old and feeling ill at ease, like, oh, this is creepy as, like, this, and hilarious, by the way, but just like the tone that he would strike was so different and so edgy, and it just brought this weird energy into the room, right? This is before he made it. And so Blake Clark told me the story about how he had to go and clean up the, not clean up the main room, but close the door, lock stuff, make sure everything's locked up or whatever. It was like 2 a.m. And that Sam was in the original room, because sometimes you can hear faintly each other in the rooms when you're doing your sets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you'll be eating a dick on in the original room, and then whoever's in the main room is killing it's it, yeah. It's very soul defeating. But anyway, yeah,
no kidding.
And he said that Kinison was on in the original room, and he was in the main room, like, checking out or what, doing everything, and that he would hear these whispers: "It's him. It's him. He's on stage now. It's him." Right?
God.
Right? So cut to, I've had 2 experiences with weird things that have happened to me at the Comedy Store. One is Mitzi had a long time ago, which was such a great gig, a gig at the old Dunes Hotel in Las Vegas. And the Dunes was a massive hotel, and it was, you know how they have the Caesar's Palace, yeah, right? It was across the street from Caesar's Palace, but to the side. Uh-huh. And there was a big showroom, and she had the Comedy Store show in there for years and years and years and years. So it was a great gig because, A, if you got into that gig, you could literally make your whole month's rent and yeah, everything you spent by just working 1 week at the Comedy Store in Vegas, right? And the first time I went to the Comedy Store in Vegas, I think I was doing comedy at the store for about 6 months. I might have been 21 and a half, wow, 22, maybe at the time. So green, so not ready. So I go to the Comedy Store in Vegas, right? And I'm shitting my pants.
How many seats?
Like, it's like the size of the main room, which yeah, is like a Vegas showroom. The main room is like a Vegas showroom. Yeah, no. Wait, I think it's more than 300. I don't know the exact number. We could look it up. But it's like a Vegas showroom. It's pretty big. And the thing is about those Vegas showrooms is the backstage is very deep behind the curtain, because old school Vegas shows, and still some of the good Vegas shows now, need a lot of props. You know, some of them had animals. There's a huge backstage area, right? The Comedy Store in Los Angeles, not so much. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell 2 stories about that. So I go to Vegas for the first time, and this is about Mitzi Shore. And I know it's not going to go good. I've been doing, you know what I mean? Like, I know, like, I'm a dummy. It's not, yeah. And I'm working with guys that have been doing it 20 years already, right? So I bomb my ass off. And then I get off stage, and Mitzi Shore in the green room is like, yeah, I need to talk to you, right? And so we go, and no one's giving me eye contact, which is the worst. You know, in a comedy club, you're in trouble when no one else is giving you, when all the other comedians aren't giving you eye contact. You're like, I'm fucked, right?
So can you imagine being 22 years old, sitting with the godmother of comedy, right?
And you, and who is, everyone's afraid of her. She can make or break your career. Like, and I was like, oh, back to the stripper pole for me. You know, like I was like, it was like that. And I go into the dressing room and she said, I'm going to do my Mitzi voice because everyone has a Mitzi voice. And she goes, oh, Felicia, I'm going to have to send you home, but I don't want you to worry because this is my fault, not your fault. This is my fault. I sent you too soon and I don't want you to worry. So you can imagine how relieved I was, but how at the same time, humiliated in front of the other comics. But she could not have been more of a generous person
that
in that
moment.
That
is so kind, yeah.
And also understand, you know, it was a Vegas showroom at a verified hotel that was beloved for a long time with huge signs.
So do
and
you
your
think-
name on the sign.
Wow.
And the next morning, they gave me a limo to go back to the airport, and I'm in the limo, and as I turn around, they're taking my name I was like, well, there you go. That's 22.
Oh my God. That is such a great story.
And then cut to about a year later, she sends me back. I didn't get any less spots, right? A year later, she sends me back and I was like, oh my God. And then I did well and then it was fine. And so then from the age of like 22 to probably, I would say 28, I had the most blessed experience in comedy. I got to work. I got to see Pryor on stage before he was ill. Like, I got to experience so many wonderful people, so many crazy people, a lot of shitheads. But it was like going to college for me, right? Mm-hmm. So I get to go back to Vegas. This is probably like 4 or 5 times in. And the way the showroom worked is when you walked into the showroom, right? It's a big Vegas showroom. Stage is to your front. So if you're sitting there and the stage is in the front, there are two ways to get to the stage, like any stage, the left side and the right side. And on the left side, you would exit and there were green rooms. There were probably like 3 or 4 green rooms, very nice green rooms. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my friend Alan told me, because there always was this big rumor that Sam Kinison shot the TV in the green room because he was all fucked up. And my friend Alan was like, that's not true. That's totally rumor. He had a little pistol. He did shoot at it, but it didn't break the glass. So we went and we found a hammer and we broke the glass.
Oh, that makes the story so much better.
It makes it so much better if he just shot. And it turned out that he got charged for it because that was Elvis's TV that was in that green room. It was like one of those ones that your parents drag out to the curb with a free sign on it that didn't really work. But then he got charged because it was like an Elvis TV that, that they were like, it's the beloved Elvis TV, right?
It was like a console TV or something.
Yeah, one of those in the wooden thing, like in, mid-century Hollywood style, right? Yeah. So then my entrance, so you're looking towards the stage, to the left is where you get off stage where all the green rooms are. So my entrance is the right, right? I'm supposed to go into the right. But now keep in mind, there's this whole back area, right? This whole back area of just darkness, right?
Yeah. Oh.
So I always felt like this is creepy. Like I get all creeped out about stuff, right? So I asked one of the stagehands, like finally got the nerve to say, because I would always run in heels to the other side and cower, before I would go on. So then they got into the habit of walking me around to the back. Now, when they would walk you behind stage to the entrance on the right, the way it was a little cubby hole and there were 3 doors. Okay, there were 2 fire doors. One actually was a fire door that they always kept open, which was your entrance to the stage, right? One was a fire door that actually went out to the audience.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah.
And then a third one was actually a storage door. And one night in particular, the gentleman, I can't remember his name, stagehand, nice guy, union guy, walks me to my entrance. We see the light of the stage. He's like, cool, you're good, right? He goes to leave around the corner, right? And all the other doors are closed except the stage door. And I'm sitting there and I start to hear the guy do my introduction. And behind me, the closet door opens up.
right? And I turn around, I can hear it, and I turn around, and there is this floating head, swear to God, a floating head, and it looks kind of chalky, and it's like 8 feet off the ground, and it's watching or listening, like looking towards the direction where the guy just left me and walked around the curtain to get back to the green room, right? The stagehand. And I start laughing because I think they're fucking with me, right?
Of course.
And I'm like, ah, funny, you guys, right? And then the thing turns around slowly and it looks on me, at me, and it dawns on me what I'm seeing, right? And I fucking scream bloody murder, right? I scream bloody murder, right? And but I screamed it right when the guy was introducing me and it was his last laugh, right? So I screamed right at the last laugh. So no one really heard it in the crowd, right? And then when I screamed, the face disappears. I swear to God, I'm not crazy. The face disappears. The door slams shut. I don't know what possessed me to do that. I put my hand on the knob and it's locked.
Oh my God. Right?
Yeah. And then it was like, now the comedy of Felicia Michaels.
So what then? Yeah. You go out.
I had to go out and do my 7 minutes.
Wait, was it a human head? Like, what did it look like?
Yeah, it was like a really chalky human head with wisps of hair and a really pale looking, and it floated maybe 7 to 8 feet off the ground.
So is this something around Mitzi Shore? In other words, because the Comedy Store, as we know, we talked about being
haunted.
Well,
they said it was...
It followed Mitzi.
No, I can't say that necessarily, but they said it was like an old stagehand. They always say that it died of a heart attack in 1967
Say it like Red Fox died on his stage at Paramount Studios during a taping of his sitcom, and people
Dick
do,
Sean, remember Dick Sean?
No, who was that guy?
He was a comedian. He died during I think he did a lot of political stuff too, but he died in the middle of a show at a college and they were like, what's going on? Yeah, he died on stage. So anyway, cut to the Comedy Store, right? So this is about a year ago. And I tell my podcast partner this, and she thinks I'm crazy. So the Comedy Store in the main room, now the main room, of course, is like a big Vegas showroom, but it's not deep behind. It's just green rooms, right? There's a long hallway that goes past the stage. I think there might be like a piano back there. And then there's a huge set of green rooms, like two green rooms that have like showers, but they're more towards the side of it in the back, right? And then the hallway itself that that connects up to the backstage, there are two or three, I want to say three little green rooms. They're really little, they're, you know, like 5 by 10 feet long.
Just a mirror and a
mirror with the bulbs all around it and two chair. Chairs. Yeah. You know, chairs can fit it. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. And so the way they do it, and they're pink inside and all that. And so and they have sliding pocket doors so you can close them so when people had to change, right? So between two of the sliding pocket doors, there was like a bulletin board, and they always put the lineup of that night's comedians on there, right? They put that in all the rooms, right? Maybe not the belly room. So I walk back there. No one's back there. Right? It's like, you know, late night, one night, no one's back there and someone's on stage and I'm about to get ready to go on. And, I first stop and see my name on the lineup and then, all the doors were open, right? To the green rooms. And then I walk past it and I go peeked behind the curtain. And then I was like, okay, so I go put a lipstick on and one of the pocket doors is sticking about, 6 inches out of the pocket door, right? It slides into the wall, that kind of a door. And before I go, because I was going to take a picture, because I'm a narcissist, of my name on the lineup to put on social media, because what you do, and it makes me feel good about myself, because I'm a complete insecure narcissist. So I go to put my hand on the pocket door to push it in, like just OCDing out for no reason, right? And it won't move. And I'm not like pushing it in by any chance. I'm just like, oh, it's stuck, and that's their problem, whatever. And then I walk like 2 feet. And I stand in front of where the names are, and I take my phone out of my purse to take a picture of the lineup. And as I go do it, the pocket door goes up and down and up and down and up and down, right? And I was like, what the fuck?
God. Oh, my God.
And I ran out of there. And that was just
that was a year ago.
That was a year ago. Now, my friend Jessica is also my podcast partner. She's like, oh, you just must have pushed it so hard. And I was like, no. It was like, oh, it's stuck, you know. But if maybe I could see, because I have pocket door closets, that it could fall off the little railing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go up and down and up and down and up and down.
And also, you would already stop touching it. I mean, there was nobody else touching it.
Yeah.
I totally believe you.
Okay.
I do, because I've heard stuff about the comedy store.
Yeah. So that is the scary thing about the comedy
store. It is. Tell me more about Mitzi.
Well, I was very lucky when I got into comedy and I had been a stripper. I grew up on welfare, and I was briefly married to an abusive guy, and then I split, and I did like a wet t-shirt contest, became a stripper, met a comedian there, got into comedy, moved to California, was stripping by the airport, and I did some open mics. I had to wait till I was 21. No, I mean, we get all through that. You have to tell all that.
I know, so, but you're so funny. I was stripping by the airport. Were you with the one that says live nudes?
Oh, it was called the Jet Strip. At the time, it was called the Jet Strip.
I always laugh at the ones that say live nudes, because what's the alternative there?
And by the way, the worst stripper on the planet was me. And no, I was a terrible stripper. I have no rhythm. I broke my ankle when I was a kid. I don't look good in high heels. You know what I mean? Anything with a pole,
I find that so difficult. I mean, I've just tried to, you know,
right. Never touched the pole.
So difficult.
Yeah, I just would walk around. My favorite songs were the Beach Boys in My Room, because it was like literally a minute and 17 seconds. Like I, you know, my thing was I always bullshit at the bar with the guys. I was not a good dancer.
Okay, so then you got into comedy because you met a comedian and you maybe...
Well, that was in Colorado. I grew up in Colorado.
But maybe that made you think, okay, well, that's a feasible career. Is that maybe, do you think he gave you that incentive?
Oh, no, not at all. Okay. I had met him at a strip club, and then he took me to my first comedy club, and then I was talking, I was kind of drunkies, first time I'd really drank. And I was all like, I could do that. Because this chick was bombing. And then he like dared me, like, you know.
Well, and so then I tried that. He was part of the impetus.
Well, I mean, yes.
In a way. Okay. Yes. I'm just saying, because it's a big deal to step on stage at any time. The first time.
Look, especially. Once you show your titties at the age of 18, it ain't that difficult. You know what I mean?
I guess. But it's still such a... Well, anyway. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Right. So when I moved to LA, I wasn't old enough to get into the comedy store, not even to go see a show. Like, they would let the younger guys in, but they were like, nope. Yeah, it was crazy.
Why is that?
Because it was a bar, you know, and I
wasn't
21.
But why would they let the younger guys in?
Because there weren't a lot of women in comedy at that time. And the women that were in comedy tended to be women who came out of college or university, or came at it with a different angle. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of women, like Elaine Boozler, came from New York, who were already veterans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rita Rudner. Like, they came at it from a more of an intellectual point of view on how to go about this. Mm-hmm. For me, I came at it from such a wildly different source that, you know, when I was 20, I was like, I'm going to be Canadian. They were like, get the fuck out. Hit bricks, lady. Hit bricks, chick. You know what I mean? Like, I was that chick. You know what I mean? Big ass bangs, the mini skirt. They were like, get the fuck out. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't blame them. I look like a complete idiot. So when I was 21, I finally got to go to the open mic and participate at the comedy store. And I got on stage. It was packed. And Mitzi was there. Because back then she would watch all the comics.
This was on Sunday nights?
It was on a Monday nights. Monday nights used to be the best night at the comedy store at that time. It's shifted. Like, Mondays are still great nights now because they have Kill Tony, so it's still great.
Right.
But Monday nights were, they did improv in the main room. It was just a whole different animal. And now it's Tuesday nights are really great because everyone's in town. Yeah. So everyone goes on Tuesday nights, all the great comics. Well, they're great comics anyway. All the,
Rich comics. Anyway, so...
No, but every night is on fire there now.
Oh, yeah. It's craziness.
The Comedy Store, yeah. It is... Well, really all the comedy clubs, it seems, are just doing so well. It's almost like the 80s craze again seems to be happening.
It is. They went through a dark period because comedy fell out of flavor in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It went through a dark period. So I go on stage and I bomb.
Oh, God.
Like no one's business. Like ass was sweating. And the only person laughing in the room was Mitzi Shore.
Wow.
I bombed so fucking bad. But here's the thing about Mitzi. Her thing is she liked types.
Right.
Like.
Yeah, stereotypes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You are
yeah,
the.
Yeah, I'm the dumb blonde. Yeah. You know what I mean? She already had like, like Carrie Snow, who was a heavyset sardonic woman. She had Karen Haber, who was a, Jewish girl that told stories about her mom. You know what I mean? So my thing from the get-go was just because I had just spent 2 years of my life, in a strip club.
You were original.
So I could talk to any guy about anything and talk about sex, and it didn't bother me. You know what I mean? And also, if you go into an average comedy club, what would you say the average age of an audience is? 32, 35?
Yeah, sure.
When you're 20, 21, 22, you have nothing in common to talk to 35-year-olds.
And a lot of times the younger comics haven't lived a life.
Right. So but because I was around sex, the sex business and
all
that.
Did you come out right away and say, I strip by the airport?
Oh, no. That was like a big secret because
I see.
It wasn't tolerated. Yeah. So she didn't know that I was a stripper by the airport. She didn't know. I was just some dumb blonde like, that's when you're sucking a guy's dick. You know what I mean? Like it was like that. So she didn't know.
But that is such a great hook in terms of you're so beautiful and your sweet little voice and then you're talking like Dice Clay or something. You know
right.
What I mean?
That so was
really
a
funny, funny picture.
Yeah. And then, so I was very lucky that I got into the Comedy Store. And you have to understand at that point, it was crazy dark at the Comedy Store. Not like the dark ages. I mean, comedy was booming, but it was like Kinnis, the time of Kinnison, right before he hit big. So there were like when chick comics are like now, like, it's so hard to go to an open mic. I'm like, talk to the hand, lady, because you have no idea. But what saved me was that I had been a stripper.
Right.
So when the guys gave me a rash of shit, it was like I could take it and dole it back.
Absolutely.
So that was how I met Mitzi Shore and got into the Comedy
Store. And she passed you that first time?
The very first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The very first time. So 21 years old.
Everybody else in the room, they might have thought you were funny, but as you know, a lot of times
I was not funny.
Well, but comics also don't give anybody much. You know, they aren't necessarily givers. Right. They're not necessarily going to make you laugh or they're not necessarily going to laugh at you because
you have to win them over. Especially in that period of time. No one would talk to me. They were like,
that is so unbelievable.
They were like this. Well, it didn't matter if it was the comedy business or any kind of business. That's how it was for women in that era where you were treated in that fashion. And, and then what changed it all around for me is, she would always give me the 8 o'clock spot. Now the 8 o'clock spot or the first spot on the show is generally given to a door guy who's a comedian that's up and coming, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's working there. And so that's how they normally kick off the shows. Then that wasn't necessarily so. So I got the first spot for a long time. And then one day I go up to Mitzi Shore, probably about a year in, and I'm like, Mitzi, I've been doing really good. And that's exactly how I spoke. I've been doing really good, and I think you should give me a shot and put me on later. I can do later spots. And then the very next, this is Mitzi Shore to the T. The very next day, or the very next week, I get my spots, and I have to go after Paul Mooney. I don't know if you know Paul Mooney is.
At what time? 1 o'clock?
It's probably 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
Right, but Paul Mooney... Yeah. Gave no fucks, right? And Paul Mooney was a legendary in the sense that he was Pryor's friend. He wrote for Pryor. He, you know what I mean? He wrote a lot of things, and he is cutting no one any slack. He's a very, very unforgiving person at that time to anybody else other than if you were in the circle. fair enough. Nothing, I'm not ragging on him.
Yeah, it's just what it is.
Yeah. I love Paul Mooney, you know. So that was Mitzi Shore's way of like, okay, youngin, let's see what you can do. So Paul Mooney is up there and he's killing and he says the N-word like 1,000 times, right? God. Right, like, you know, and he's being aggressive and the crowd's drunk. And then I go up there and I'm like, hey, you never know when you're sucking a guy's dick, right?
nothing, right?
Oh. And then I go, oh, yeah. Paul Mooney can get up here and say N-word, 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 but I said the word, right? That I didn't know, right? I knew it was not okay to say, but I was sink or swim.
Yeah.
But I can't get up here and say pussy?
Yeah.
Fuck you people, right?
Wow.
And then the crowd was like, oh. And then the only one that laughed, once again, Paul Mooney. He laughed so hard. And then after that night, I was one of the fellas.
Oh, man. That's a great story. Yeah, yeah. Well, because you decide that I'm the boss of me and I can say anything I want and I'm confident and I know what I'm talking about and you're going to listen.
Well, that's the cleaned up version, but it was like sink or swim. If I'm going to go out. Here's the thing about the Comedy Store. I was just talking to someone about this. Like, once you're made a regular at the Comedy Store, she puts on the bigger acts. They put on now because she's obviously, but they follow her formula. So the bigger acts go on probably, if the show starts at 8, the bigger acts go on around, you know, they build it up.
10:30, 11.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 8:40. No, now it's a real, more of a real show, like, you know, lineup wise. She puts all the big people go up towards the front. And then the edgier or the newer people go towards the end because it goes, you know, shows go till 2 in the morning.
Right.
And so a lot of the people that go on later, you can, you know, that's like a workout spot. So you don't have to go up there and do your 15 minutes you know are going to kill.
Yeah.
The purpose of those spots are to train you, to try new material. So and to get you to a point where you're so comfortable, you could talk about anything, right?
Right.
And so that was the beauty of the Comedy Store. Once you're made a regular there, you know, of course, if you got a, you know, 9:30 spot in the main room, you're going to do your show.
Yeah, you're going to do your regular stuff.
But if you got a late night spot, that's actually meant for you to try anything you want to try. And you don't get pinged for it or dinged for it.
What do you do in preparation if your set's at 1 a.m.? What do you do?
That's for me personally, because now I'm a little older, like you can't go hang out at 8 o'clock if you got a 1:45 spot. That's right. Not going to happen.
No.
But then you can't just show up at, you know, 1 to do a 1:15 spot because your energy will be fucked. You know what I mean? Because you're at home getting all tired.
And everybody's going to bed.
Going to bed.
Right.
So I usually try to show up probably a couple hours earlier just to walk my circle around the club, and you want to hang out with your friends, you know, because you have to get your energy to an exact point. Yeah. That's my experience.
Do you drink coffee before you?
I do drink coffee. Like the other day, oh my God, last weekend I had like, might have been Thursday night actually, like I had a 1 o'clock spot or something like 12:45. And then I went with my friend, my podcast partner, Jessica. We went to a party, a business party we had to go to. And then it was an Oscar party. It was the night of the Oscars. We had to go to an Oscar party. And then she had the 8 o'clock spot. And I live in Topanga now, which is like an hour away.
Sure,
So I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to hang out and eat the big turd and hang out, which is a long time to hang out if you have that 1:15 spot,
kidding.
Right? And then I was around 9:45. They're like, yeah, no one's here. Like no one's in the whole club. Like for 3 minutes, you get those miracle moments, right?
That's
where 3 minutes,
right.
No one's there. So then it's like, okay, you're on. So then, but I had drank so much coffee so I do my set, have a great time, like, yay, you know, because of the having the late spot where you're in front of 10 people who have drank, you know,
they've been drinking.
Probably young men, you know,
yeah.
I'm awkwardly aged. I'm a chick, so they're not having any of it. So you got to figure it out, right? But I had drank so much coffee that and I was done by like 10:15 or something. And then I drove home. Still couldn't go to sleep till 3 in the morning because I drank
screwed.
So much coffee.
Yeah, then you have to take Ambien or something to go down the other way. For sure.
Yeah.
It's super interesting to speak with somebody so accomplished. And like I said, as a woman, because, you know, obviously, it's just a male-dominated industry. Still, comedy is male-dominated.
Yeah, but it's
It is, but it,
no, it's changing. But I'm just saying, thing, like,
it's as long as I've been in it, it's changing the most right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
I hope you're right.
It really has changed when it's come to women in comedy, and I do feel in some clubs still there are not enough women represented. And I know when I stopped doing comedy for 9 years because of my kids, and when I came back, there was a guy at the Comedy Store named Tommy, who was a booker then at the Comedy Store. May he go fuck himself in hell. And sorry to be that person, but I went back and I was talking to him, and I was like, how do I get back into the Comedy Store? And he, this probably I was 42.
Yeah.
And he said, you're too old. We don't like old people here anymore. Literally to my fucking face.
And did you tell somebody?
And six, no, who are you going to tell? This yeah. is like 10, oh. this is probably like 10 years ago. And literally at the same time, there's a guy on stage 5 years older than me. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
But it has changed.
Yeah.
And now there's so many young women at the Comedy Store right now. And there's, I really believe right now that women are changing what's going on in comedy right now. And not, you know what I mean? We're more touchy-feely or more inclusive, but literally are changing how comedy is written and performed. I think we just went through a huge metamorphosis of women directing the direction of comedy, of like funneling it into a more serious and creative
and smarter
thing.
Yeah,
and smarter thing. And yeah. I believe Lori Kilmartin is one of those people. I think that's
I believe that too. Yeah,
is going into
Dead People Suck, that was her book.
Yeah, she's an amazing
she
comedian.
Is and Jackie Cation. There's absolutely so yeah. many yeah. bright people. I feel like because comedy is so hard that it takes so much dedication to write and rewrite and write and rewrite and just get it down to precise words that it takes sometimes a woman to put all the effort in.
Well, it's interesting because I did take my friend Tiff Stevenson and we went to the Comedy Store the other night and we were watching quite a few young women. And how comedy in some ways has changed now than obviously back in the day is Rich Scheidner said this to me, and I 100% agree with this. Rich Scheidner was a comedian that did The Tonight Show like 12 times.
Yeah, he's been on the show as well.
He's an amazing...
Great guy.
Amazing comedian. And he told me a few years ago, he's like, the thing that has changed about comedy is back in the day, comedy was sarcasm. Sarcasm and jokes. Like, the jokes were sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And now it's irony. So it's not, I have a punchline, I'm just here to point out ironic, weird things. Like if you...
From my point of view.
And so...
So it's more attitude.
Yeah. And it's like when the alternative movement in comedy came, that is what ushered it in. So it was more about storytelling and more about irony and less punchlines. It doesn't mean it doesn't work as good. It's just a different style of comedy. So,
but don't you feel like you have to have reached a certain level before people are interested in your storytelling, as it were?
Well, this is what I'm getting at. So Tiff Stevenson from England, we were hanging out at the Comedy Store and we were watching some young women, and she was just like, you know, in England, they have a Comedy Store in England. It's not affiliated to this Comedy Store, but it's also like the best club in England.
Yeah.
One of the best clubs in England. And she said, in England, you don't get to work the Comedy Store till you're ready.
Yeah.
And so it was surprising to see someone up on stage not having full form jokes. And we were there till I think my spot was like 1:15. And I said, well, you have to understand that the Comedy Store is a different monster than any other club. Their focus is to shepherd in the new a generation of comedians. So in the same aspect of Mitzi Shore, only taking someone who, you know, because she was about, you know, do I have someone who is Asian and does this? Do I have someone who is
stereotypes.
This? Yeah, yeah. And which I normally don't agree with, but for her, that was a business model and not a dumb one. You know what I mean?
No, not at all.
Like Yakov.
Yeah.
You know, he got to be there because he was a Russian comic. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That was his thing.
That was, in a way, it was such a great experience to be able to go through that and to see it the next generation of not just women, but young men go through that, where part of the Comedy Store is you get the best comedians in the business, but it's also, we're going to show you the next generation.
Yeah.
And a lot of clubs don't do that.
Yeah. Most, they just stick to their guys.
Most clubs do not.
Yeah, they stick to
They stick to what's a tried and true.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting to do it a little bit here and there, but it's like you don't work the Laugh Factory until you've already got chops.
No
you know
kidding,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they use very few women. I have no fear of saying that.
I understand.
It's embarrassing how few women there is. I'll just go ahead and say. The Improv uses a lot of women.
Yeah. They Flappers use more. Flappers, yeah, I think, uses the most.
Yeah, yeah. But the Improv does use a lot of women. So, but the Comedy Store, you know, their interest is we're going to bring up-and-comers to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and we're going to nurture those careers.
I love talking to you. I think you are so bright and you have so much, you've got history. And what the thing is also, it's not about you being old. It's about that you started so flipping young. So it's never, when people say, oh my God, because seriously, I mean, you're not old and your voice is totally still completely bright and fresh and your attitude is there.
Yeah, so
don't ever think like, oh, I'm one of the, you know, back in the day, because frankly, I think this is your day, dude.
Well, it is.
I think the day is back in the day.
Like I remember when the alternative comedy scene came on, you know,
in the 90s.
I was never a part of that.
Yeah.
And people always looked at me as an older comic, even though I was their same age, because I had started so much younger. You know what I mean? So, which, by the way, I'm so excited that and pleased and look at it with a bunch of pride that I got to have that experience.
That's really good. Yeah. And you do come from a place of authority because you can back it up. You've walked the walk.
Yeah. But circling back to the beginning of the conversation of being able to watch the younger generation have so much hubris in delight in talking dirty, maybe not with punchlines that work, but with such exuberance, you know, and that they think they're the first ones to say it, where you would think you'd be all like, no, those fucking people. But I look at people like that, like, yeah, say it, you know?
Yeah,
like,
man, because somebody has to keep the faith and carry on. Yeah.
But they just do it now. That's like jokes about eating ass. And it's like, well, who didn't do that joke back in the 80s? But we called it tossing your salad. You know what I mean? And you know what the problem with this, with tossing your salad? Croutons. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So anyway.
Well, but, you know, and we got to wrap it up. But porn has a lot to do with that as well. I mean, in terms of the internet and the accessibility of porn.
Right.
And so then it turns to that. Like, they keep pushing the envelope. Plus, a lot of the younger people on stage now, their parents are our age. So they have been brought up with, let's face it, Generation X parents that are a little hipper and smarter and more with it. You know, not like my parents. They were in the flippin' depression. They were raised during, you know, the depression.
Yeah.
So I think that like everybody's getting a little smarter. And at the end of the day, comedy is about intelligence. Don't you think?
I think it's just, yes.
You got to be so smart to be a comic.
I think it's, in some cases, yes. But in some cases, it's like people who can just sit at the piano and listen to a couple songs and play the songs. Like everyone has a different skill, and comedians are the first firewall of the mirror held to society. So it's not that you have to be the smartest person. You just have to be able to access the part of you that's like, hey, what's going on here? And to be able to read and to be able to talk about what's happening in our society. And it doesn't have to necessarily be that you're the smartest person in the room, but you're the most aware of how it's making you feel, and the able to
You're playing the devil's
articulate
advocate,
it.
As it were. Yes. We got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning in. Find Felicia over there on Twitter at Felicia Michaels and also on Instagram at Felicia Michaels. Of course, follow me over there as well at Storyworthy and at Story Smash.
Can I say one thing?
Please do.
If you have Amazon Prime, please look up Pervs. It's my comedy documentary that I made, and it has Felipe Esparza in it. It has Joey Diaz in it. Laurie Kilmartin. There's like 25 comedians in it. And it's about deviance and comedy. And it's called Pervs. And it's available free for people that have Amazon Prime. And please, if you're into like a confessional style of comedy specials like Hannah Gatsby.
Yes.
I did a special called the whole story, which is based on growing up on welfare and being a stripper and getting into comedy. It's a comedy special, but it is very confessional, and that's called My Whole Story, also available free on Amazon Prime.
That is amazing. I don't know why I haven't seen that. It's making me really bummed out. The whole story.
The whole story, yeah.
I can't wait. Oh, that's great, Felicia. Thank you. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. So one more time, on behalf of the very talented Felicia Michaels, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.